I don't know what's happening to my voice tonight, but maybe I'll get through my part of it here. Tonight, the program, after I'm off of here, the program will be recorded, fully recorded, and hopefully it will be, it will be turned over to KPFK, and they will look it over and decide if it's something they can use. If so, hopefully it will be broadcast on KPFK or portions thereof or whatever they decide. But in any event, the program tonight will be recorded for that purpose. I guess, as you know, we have Don White with us to speak to us, which I'm very happy to have him with us again. And I think it's being recorded in two different directions. It'll be recorded to KPFK, and I think this gentleman right here, Ralph, will be recording it also. So anyway, I think we're ready to kick off here, and I'm going to turn this over to Alan. They have worked on it a little bit. It's not... Don?
I just wanted to explain that this is kind of make-believe tonight. It's a little bit of pretend. What the project wants is a sample of a program that is modeled after a program in the past, in the 60s, where discussion groups formed throughout Southern California in private homes and listened to a discussion on the radio. Then they turned the radio off, and then the neighbors in these living rooms discussed the topic based on what they had heard in a half-hour program. So we're pretending tonight, not that this will be broadcast, but it will be given to KPFK as merely, if it works, merely a sample of what such a program would look like. And the reason I have to do this disclaimer, I'm on the local advisory board, and I cannot motivate for my own airtime. So I don't think this will be played, because it would violate that. But it's a model of what such a program would look like.
Okay, thanks. So they've worked on this a bit, and they know what they're up to. So I'm going to turn this over to Alan, whose voice I hope is a little better off than mine tonight. So Alan Taylor.
Hello, I'm Alan Taylor, the host of the Peace and Healing Community Discussion Program here on KPFK, and we're pleased you're joining us. In scores of living rooms throughout Southern California tonight, neighborhood friends have joined together for an evening of discussion. In our half-hour program, we will explore some of the aspects of a major issue facing our communities, and then the discussion groups will continue on after the program, going even deeper into the subject. For tonight's program, our guests will explore the subject facing national crisis, public information, and the media. The program has three questions we would like to propose. Number one, is the U.S. media biased? Number two, why is media bias effective? Three, what can the public do to broaden media points of view? Our guest is Don White, a retired Los Angeles school teacher and veteran activist. Don has been in the committee in solidarity with the people of El Salvador for 22 years and serves on the boards of directors of the Office of America's for Democratic Action, and is a member of several citywide coalitions. He is also on the board of Clinica para las Americas, a community clinic in MacArthur Park, Pico Union neighborhoods. Call this number, 818-893-9095, for the location and further information about the discussion groups. I'm pleased to present Don White.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm excited about this program, and I want to greet those people throughout Southern California who have gathered in their living rooms tonight to listen to just an overview of this subject, which I think is very critical. And I really salute you all
for coming together and taking seriously this resource that KPFK has. And I hope that your discussions following this program are really fruitful. We'd like to hear from you. The question of media bias, and the producers of the program have asked first, is the media biased? And I come back with a very strong and affirmative yes, the media is biased. We can see it reflected in many, many ways. Primarily, the media bias includes a narrow perspective that is presented in the media, radio and television, in the newspapers. A very narrow perspective. It would be like Meet the Press with conservative Republicans and middle-of-the-road Democrats debating the future of our country. Today, 50% of the American people oppose a military aggression against Iraq. And it will be moving very soon to a majority of Americans. And yet the media still brings on to the airwaves Fox News, The Factor, The O'Reilly Factor, the other programs. They bring on a narrow perspective. One might ask, for instance, in making the argument that the media is biased, where on the talk shows, where on the television talk shows are Noam Chomsky? Where is Michael Parenti? Where's Dr. Helen Caldicott? Where's Alexander Coburn? If the media were not biased, and in many countries the broad range of opinion is reflected in the media, sometimes government media, the question can be asked, where are the left thinkers? Where are progressives? So I would say that one reflection of media bias is the narrow perspectives that they move with. There is also the issue of corporate ownership. It is clear, for instance, ABC television often covers as hard news a movie premiere that is actually a movie produced by Disney. And the merger of entertainment and news is extremely evident. The merger of entertainment. If you watch news, so-called news in the morning on some of the independent stations, it's almost like a circus. There is not. My father lived near the border with Canada, north of Seattle, and he always watched Canadian television. Even though it wasn't perfect, it was hard news, it was analysis. And the news coming from Seattle and the corporate stations in the United States was increasingly smiley, give and take between the commentators, and lacking substance. So there is a very, very clear, reflection, in my judgment. We also have the issue of oversimplification and dumbing down of the issues. If you go on the AM dial from 640 KFI across the dial to 790 ABC Radio Talk, over to what used to be KIEV at, I believe it's 89 on the AM dial, what you have here is an array of right-wing ideological talk show hosts that do not want to analyze the issues of our day, but what they really want to do is entertain their listeners and build ratings. What happens when a thoughtful progressive calls in? They're ridiculed, marginalized, made fun of. It's something like the question of raising the issue of opposing the military aggression against Iraq. They'll often come back with, you support Al-Qaeda. In other words, they have this simplified dumbing down in which they entertain their listeners but do not actually give them deep analysis. Now, of course, this is not true across the dial. We have National Public Radio, we have KPFK, We have KPCC. It's not across the dial. But another issue of bias is accessibility. The most easily accessed radio on the AM dial does not deal with analysis and a broad range of opinion, but is designed to entertain. There's a team on KFI. Believe me, if they ever ask you to call in there to explain your political issues, don't do it. Because what they'll use you as is a foil. They'll ridicule you and refuse to actually deal in depth with the issues that you're bringing forward. We also have the whole issue of the public schools not dealing with critical thinking, analysis of the press, analysis of the media. I actually taught school for 35 years with LA Unified, and one of the things I did was have students look at print material, have them analyze television shows, look critically at what they're really getting there. The lack, to some degree, of a public that is thinking critically, partly because of the, I would say, lack of access to real programming that's challenging, as well as some of the other issues I've put forward, in my judgment, makes a strong case for media bias. The question often asked on the television shows right now is not whether or not we should bomb Iraq, but whether we should have congressional hearings prior to bombing Iraq. And therefore you have actually developing Senator Dianne Feinstein as kind of a hero in some ways to liberals, saying, yes, she's holding out for hearings. She appears on talk shows and is sometimes projected as an opponent to the bombing of Iraq. But all she's saying really is this the correct time to do it? Should we have hearings? Should we have the Congress come in and validate the aggression? So to question number one, I would actually argue very strongly that the media has a bias, and that media bias is affecting policy. There are other, actually, reflections of this. How many of you have done press work trying to get the press to your events? Let's say you have a rally to oppose a military attack against Iraq, and you're successful in getting a television crew there. What are they interested in? A quick soundbite. Often it's not a reporter, it's a television cameraman. And he'll say, I just need two sentences. Why are you here? And then if you're lucky, one of those sentences will get on the evening news. And very often, no words from activists are on the news. It's basically a visual where the reporter says, a small group gathered in front of the federal building tonight, protesting the proposed invasion of Iraq, without even the words of activists on the air. So soundbite television in the news is incredible. And this is also a problem even with some shows that people, many admire. What was formerly known as the McNeil-Lehrer Report often does not have that broad spectrum of guests. And also you have other programs, Nightline. It often does not have the Chomskys, usually, you know, almost never has the Chomskys and the Parentes on board. If we kind of come to consensus that the media is biased, then the question comes up, why is that the case? I went on the web and found a story by a media reporter, author, Ben Bagdikian. He says that when in 1982 he completed research on one of his books, The Media Monopoly. In 1982, he reported in his book that 50 corporations controlled half or more of the media business. And by 1986, when he finished a second revision, the 50 corporations that controlled media had shrunk to 29. And then he did a revised version later, and it had shrunk down to 20. Now, the issue here is moving toward the second question, the shrinking consolidation of control over media by fewer and fewer corporations. Of the 1,700 daily newspapers, 98% are local monopolies, and fewer than 15 corporations control most of the country's daily circulation. A handful of firms have most of the magazine business, with Time Incorporated alone accounting for approximately 40% of the industry's revenue in magazines. Three networks, and all of you, I think, are aware that ABC is owned by Capital Cities and Disney. So ABC, Capital Cities, Disney, CBS, and General Electric, NBC, still have the majority access to the television audience, and most of the book business is controlled by fewer than a dozen companies, with three major categories like paperback and trade books dominated by still fewer. The safest way to ensure diversity of opinion is diverse ownership, but this ideal has been sacrificed by government devotion to the mythical doctrine of market economics. The myth rests on the bizarre assumption that the modern American corporate scene is actually like Adam Smith's rural country market, in which all the farmers come to town to compete for the business of sharp-eyed customers. Not the case at all. And it is really a result of the irresponsibility of the FCC over the years. During the 1980s, the FCC under Mark Fowler used the country's broadcasting system as an experiment in so-called free market economics. The FCC has expanded the number of stations one corporation may own and suspended the demand that stations do any public service like news and community issues programming. It has let big operators like Murdoch, Capital Cities, Cox, and so on buy competitors, and it has made it almost impossible to challenge a license if the people don't like what they hear. The consolidation. Now, here in our own city, we've seen that when Chicago Tribune now has bought the Los Angeles Times. Those kinds of mergers, where the Chandler family cashed out the LA Times, saw an opportunity to make a bundle of money, and sold the LA Times to the Tribune Corporation from Chicago. That has an effect. All of these mergers and so on have an effect on how news is handled and how the public has access. Well, what can we do about if there is media bias, and if there are more than one reason for media bias, but if there is media bias and there are reasons for it, like corporate control, certainly the big corporations are going to look twice at a reporter who wants to do an exposé of a major corporation and how it accesses its, let's say, clothing in maquiladoras and sweatshops in other countries. Disney sewed clothing in Haiti, where people in Haiti worked for 35 to 40 cents an hour producing the apparel that is sold at Disneyland. And this is documented. It's not something I'm making up, because the National Labor Committee went to Haiti and investigated, interviewed sewing workers in Haiti. What are the chances of ABC allowing an expose of the exploitation of sewing workers in Haiti and El Salvador and Bangladesh? What are the chances of them allowing an expose of that nature to be broadcast on ABC? I would say it would be pretty remote. We can actually go to what can be done. Now, to show you that there's enormous interest in this subject, in Vermont, the independent Bernie Sanders had a series of meetings in Vermont about media bias and whether or not the media is an issue that people are interested in. There were two public town hall meetings in late April 2002 of this year, where U.S. Representative Bernie Sanders, who's an independent from Vermont, did what perhaps no member of Congress has done before, suggested that media can be a political issue in America by focusing on corporate control of the media, the severe problems it creates for self-government, and what can be done about it. The six-term congressman opened a new chapter in the struggle for media reform. And he did not do it alone. The town meetings drew overflow crowds, 400 in Burlington, Vermont. The crowds ran the gamut from students to seniors, from veteran media activists to local television station managers. Everyone was interested in how the media can better serve the public. Sanders launched each event with a 20-minute introduction that broke the political silence about the bias that warps American media and politics. He noted a whole series of his own experiences with the media, where his ideas were blacked out and so on. So what we could do, to help move this along is to contact people like Bernie Sanders, who is taking the initiative in opening up a public debate over media bias, corporate control of the media, and how the public can be a part of that. And I actually found a website from Seattle, Washington, a very active group in Seattle, www.reclaimthemedia.org, that is doing a series of public events in Seattle. And they're going to move down the coast to Portland, Oregon, and other places. What can we do about this? So there are media watchdog groups that are growing by leaps and bounds. I might also say that I think one of the very best is Fair and Accuracy in Reporting. They published the book Extra, the Media Watch Group Fair. Their website is full of not only examples of media bias, distortion, but it also has a website where actions are called for. You know, they did a story in here, some of it's kind of lighthearted. There's Paul Harvey. Some of you have heard Paul Harvey. Okay, Paul Harvey is a right winger, in case you didn't notice. He's a very conservative man, but he couches his broadcasts in kind of folksy humor. You know, he's the one who does, and now the rest of the story. Well, they did a story on him, the rest of the story. Most, or at least many, of his right-wing anecdotes are totally unsubstantiated. He'll give an ultra kind of patriotic, kind of whimsical, you know, he kind of couches his patriotism in these whimsical, and Fair then goes to the town where the story is supposed to have been originated, does the research, and in a story here, they point out that this very conservative talk show, well, he's not a talk show host, he's actually a commentator, and gives what he calls news. I know news, and that's not news. He does these, they follow up and discover that many of the things he's talking about are totally unsubstantiated. They go to the chief of police of the small town where he's reporting from, or reporting about, the archives of the newspapers, and when they have approached him, he refuses, absolutely refuses to corroborate anything that he says. He refuses to cooperate. What are some of the other options? I was in Seattle, Washington for the WTO. It was very exciting. I smashed no windows. I stole no Starbucks coffee. There were 50,000 there on the troublemakers, quote-unquote, according to the police. The troublemakers were a small handful. But something was born on the streets of Seattle that's very exciting. It's called indie media. One of the options we have open to ourselves is to use the internet and to plug into an exciting new network of news on indie media. Is there anyone in this audience who has gone on indie media for news? Okay, that's it. This is a bad sign. Here's an indie media. If you go on indie media, you have probably 40 cities in the United States. You can click onto the indie media in that city all over the world, Paris and Rome and Moscow. You can click on, and indie media is a non-commercial way to distribute news. Today, it's at a very low level of development. But one of the ways we can fight back, I think, is to use the internet as we are to organize. Much of the WTO in Seattle was organized through internet activism. If you can't get access to the corporate media, create your own. There's also micro radio. A guy by the name of John Martinez is doing micro radio in East Los Angeles. It only broadcasts to, at this point, a limited area of his community. And frankly, I think it violates FCC regulations. But that has never stopped John Martinez. It's kind of like in the war in El Salvador in the 1980s, the FMLN was not exactly sanctioned by the government of El Salvador to produce radio broadcasts from the mountains of that country during a revolution. But they kept on the move, and they kept pounding their social justice agenda to the urban centers through their, what I would call, micro radios. And now, after the war in El Salvador is finished, communities in El Salvador have micro radio stations where people in communities can turn that radio on and hear, without commercial interruption, announcements about community organizing in their own communities. It's a very, very powerful instrument. KPFK is not micro radio. It's big time radio. I don't know if you know it or not, but KPFK probably has the strongest signal west of the Mississippi, at least in FM. And it has the capacity to reach to Mexico, up to Santa Barbara, way out beyond Hesperia and the high desert, and of course out to the Pacific Ocean, which is not too far away. We need to support Pacifica. We need to support alternative radio. We need to support alternative print, a small but very effective print alternative media is Changelings. Those kinds of initiatives need to be supported. You know, I might say that not all media, I don't think all media is evil. I would actually argue that in the area of television sitcom entertainment, believe it or not, I would argue that it has helped advance to some degree. This is a shocker. To some degree, has helped to kind of advance to some degree progressive ideas. And this is how it happens. On the West Wing with Martin Sheen, they've dealt with some topics that in the 1950s, when I was watching television a lot, we never dreamt would be on TV. Some of the law shows deal with the issues of women and rape. Many of the sitcoms have very open gay and lesbian characters. In the 1950s, that would never have happened. We thought Ozzie and Harriet had their children by kind of divine intercession or something. I mean, the idea here was the kind of lily white and very benign and boring sitcoms of the 50s have been replaced many times by much more hip, multi-ethnic, multiracial sitcoms, even though I don't watch them. And I'm hoping that people do not spend a lot of time. They've actually moved forward in exploring some topics that we would not normally see, that we did not see previously. I think what I'm going to do is kind of close by looking over just a little bit the The major points that I'm maybe some of the people in these community groups out there in the living room, and we also have a group right here in the studio, so we'll also be discussing some of these things in just a moment as well. The first question, is the media biased? Yes. Our voices, many of our voices, are not heard there. The narrow perspective that's put out. The corporate control of the media, which limits just exactly how far they can go in exploring. I mean, when was the last time we heard a socialist appear on major television putting forward an argument for socialism? And yet, ideas of this nature permeate our society. The marginalizing of any kind of progressive thought. Here's an example. When Hillary Rodham Clinton was first lady, she was working for a form of universal health care. No, she wasn't. She was working for a form, a medical plan that would benefit more and more, including insuring children. The health industry reduced that argument basically to, do you want the government choosing who your doctor will be? It's complex to put out a progressive, comprehensive healthcare plan. The media will take the complex issue, reduce it to simplification and oversimplification, reduce it to basically harassing and ridiculing those who are trying to put it forward. So, there's a series of reasons why the media is biased. Our response might be to support alternative media, develop networks on the internet, support alternative print media, and then, I would say most importantly, confront corporate media to include the broadest range. I would say that if we want to have Noam Chomsky on CNN news talk shows, if we want to have Michael Parenti on Fox News talk shows, if we want Dr. Helen Caldicott to appear on major media, we actually have to be the motivating factor. Telephone calls, letters, holding accountable the, at the present time, biased media, and working hard to expand its perspective and expand the spectrum of political voice that's heard. I want to thank you very much, and again, I want to greet people in their living rooms tonight who are going to discuss this whole question of how do we confront media bias in the United States, and how do we try to correct what I think is a very, very negative influence in the development of political opinion in the United States. Thank you very much, and Alan, I'll have you come back up, I think. Thank you.
We'll open it up for questions and discussion. It's best to use the microphone if you could come forward, and we'll proceed with our discussion. John Uloth.
I noticed a couple of examples, perhaps that were missing in your dialogue. One is the thinking, and perhaps it's because it's so fait accompli and happens a couple of years ago, the shrinking of the number of news reporting services, so that there are, especially in foreign countries, there are less and less voices that we can count on to be at least somewhat objective, and when there are competing news services, to try to get a little more diversity of perspective, perhaps people in a different portion of the crowd, but often we find that our major media has only one source to choose from that's only going to give us one perspective. The other sort of question maybe I had about that was when you gave the example of ABC and Disney's sort of unholy alliance about not being able to air a story which focused on the workers of its other arm of the industry in Disney at these horrible low prices. Why is it that the general principle of competition in the United States didn't take place, that the other networks didn't immediately leap on this story and put it to the front to say, here's the advantage, we don't do what ABC and Disney are doing with this unholy alliance blocking off your news sources? And I guess the third comment slash question is about getting coverage not only for people like Noam Chomsky, these other political voices out there, but for other political parties, some of which are represented in this room. There are more than two parties in the United States. How is it that we can't entice one of the other networks to say, look, you know, we have a different story which includes this wider spectrum of political thought within the United States, and we're going to have a special on it, and neither of the other two networks do?
You know, I'm not going to just answer the question, we're going to have a discussion, but I do have just one comment.
You know, I absolutely agree with that. So we actually have a political candidate in the room tonight that's running for a city council, and she's going to find it quite difficult, I would say, to get media. Now, one thing I left out, which I just noticed I left out, was cable. You know, you can actually go and produce your own cable shows. Rosenthal does this. So there's a very good possibility that in the future, if the progressive movement develops very provocative, hard-hitting, stimulating, alternative cable shows, that they can actually compete. Now, in answer, why don't other networks? This is a publication off of FAIR's website. It's called Interlocking Directorates. And it says that the media corporation's board of directors are so interlocking. And it gives Disney ABC. Then it lists the companies that they share board members with. So on the board of Disney ABC are people who are also on the board of Boeing, City National Bank, Columbia HCA Healthcare, DoubleClick, Edison International, FedEx, Jenny Craig, Northwest Airlines, Pacific American Income Share, Shamrock Holdings, Sotheby's, the auction company, Sotheby's North America, Staples, Starwood Hotels and Resorts, Sun Microsystems, Sun America, well, it goes on and on, Xerox. So there's this incestuous relationship in the capitalist corporate America where these board members go back and forth. So if you look there, and then you were to go over to Viacom, CBS, you would see some of the same corporate people, the same companies, sending people over to be on the board there, and AOL, Time Warner. So I think one. Now, you also mentioned I think there was a time, were you referring, let's say, to a time when you had International News Service, United Press International, Associated Press? You had wire services that were filing stories and they were competing with each other. And now that's also narrowing, or they have no one there at all. The places like Sacramento are very poorly covered by news bureaus. At one time there was a United Press International News Bureau, an Associated Press News Bureau, and an International News Service News Bureau in Sacramento. And now they have like stringers up there that try to cover the Capitol. Or if it's a big story, they'll send reporters from the metropolitan areas. So it's a problem, and I'm hoping tonight in living rooms around Southern California, people are looking at the contraction of sources. I would say that if someone is interested really in alternative media and wants to actively, really be active, to search out one of the cable companies which are mandated to give public access and to begin a program like Socialists on the Air, or that might scare people away, Progressives, Ozzie and Harry, to actually go on the air with a progressive story, with a progressive program, that's one way to compete. But I think your points are well taken. Now I think we should go to a discussion and so on.
Nick Sedita.
Well, there's something that every one of us here can do to break the media bias, and that is to write letters to the editor. The LA Times has told me that they will not print a letter of mine more frequently than 1 in 6 weeks. That's okay. If I've got a good letter, I'll get somebody else to sign it and send it in. What we've got to do is to flood the letters to the editor department with the letters raising the points that we want to be raised that aren't being raised by the corporate-dominated media. So, if only one or two of us are writing letters, they're easy to ignore us. But if they get dozens of letters from one point of view, some of which are very well written, it's hard for them to keep on keeping that point of view out. So I urge all of you, when a hot issue comes up and you have strong feelings about it, write a letter to the editor. And if it's been published shorter than 6 weeks before, get a friend or a mate to sign the letter and send it in. But we've got to do what we can in our power to present the point of view that's being shut out. Thanks.
Next, I'm going to call on Fred Starner.
Just a couple of things. Last night, Walter Cronkite was interviewed by, King on CNN. And I caught the last part, and a caller asked this question: Does the media give enough time for alternative views? What do you think, Mr. Cronkite? And Mr. Cronkite says, no, they do not. They have to do much better. And, you know, we ought to quote that. Then he said, you know, what they miss here, there has been a great tragedy, September 11th, but what they've missed, he said, ladies and gentlemen, is that this is the beginning of a war of the rich against the poor on a world scale. He says, that's the root cause, and we have not discussed this, ladies and gentlemen. Now, those are two quotes that are worthy. I'm sure somebody can... I couldn't copy them. I wanted to comment on this business of the bias here. I'm going to give you two quotations, and I want you to tell me what famous writer said these. First one is, he's talking about the entrepreneur. He said, you know, there's hardly a time for merriment or diversion, but the conversation turns to some contrivance to raise price or a conspiracy against the public. Let's talk about the entrepreneur. The second quote is, in the course of the division of labor, a workman who spends his whole life doing one or two frequently very simple operations in the course of his life may become as stupid and ignorant as it's possible for a human creature to become. What was the writer who penned those two paragraphs? No. Adam Smith on both of them. Adam Smith said both of them, and I spent 30 years as an economics teacher. I didn't know that Don was a teacher too, so we both suffered the outrageous problems of teachers. And Ronald Reagan, see, introduced this phrase, the free market. He's the evil genius in the last 25 years. I don't know how many times I've heard this as a defense of what goes on here. Well, the market system is the best system. It's rational. Government should not interfere. Yet Adam Smith was the one who created government in the Wealth of Nations. And it's filled with these comments. And I'm saying there's a job here. Some of this rhetoric, and that's my final point. The left, however, and maybe we ought to give up the word socialism. I mean, it's got so much damn... Call it something else or something, whatever. Nobody knows what it is anyway. But you have to use rhetoric. I mean, I don't know how many times I've been to meetings, and it's so damn boring, you know, listening to this stuff. And you've got to take your program and turn it and make it into something that's interesting, you know, for the public. I'm a songwriter now. That's what I'm trying to do. That's another thing. But the door is opening, and I heartily approve of all the things we said. We've got to get out there, write the letters, go to the meetings, vote, donate money, and we have to have our vision and hold to it. And if we will, in the end, by God, we'll win, I'll tell you. Thank you.